Welcome to the Healthy Simplified Podcast, everyone. I'm Mark Bennett. With me today is the one, the only Mr. Joe Hatichek. He has become a very close personal friend of mine over the last 5 years, and I can't wait to do this interview for so many different reasons. You know, Joe is a very special person, but most importantly, most people refer to him as Coach. And, you know, it would not be appropriate unless, you know, Coach had an appropriate intro, especially with a little clapping and all the people, you know, they're very excited about having him here. But the most part, Joe, thank you for being here. Why don't you just tell everyone a little bit about your family? I mean, I know to you, that's probably the most important thing.
Absolutely. Mark grew up on a farm, two brothers, lived there my whole life. And, you know, working on the farm, there's no better lifestyle than getting up every day, being your own boss and always doing physical tasks, doing hard work. So learned that by nature growing up there in my DNA as a farm boy through my mom and dad, leading by example. And they were faith-filled parents. So I was very fortunate, givers back to their community in different ways. And so I was lucky to be raised in the right environment. And I knew I didn't want a farm. When I got married to my wife, Gloria, we've been happily married through the thin and the thick of things for 35 years, be 36 this upcoming summer, and had three children that we're very proud of, Trev, Tate, and Tori. And all three of them are abroad. They're not in Iowa. And I'm happy that they sprouted their wings. Trev's 29, Tate's 27, and Tori's 23. Each doing their own thing that they see their calling at this point in their life. So we're proud of those guys and expecting planning our first marriage this a year from this month. So we're super excited because I know Gloria would like to be a grandparent. So been very fortunate there with fit.
You know, when we share the story, I grew up on a ranch in West Texas. My grandfather loved to take me fishing and hunting. I think mainly because that gave him the reason, because he'd always say, hey, we can go play first, but then we're going to work after. And he never believed in power tools. I could never understood that. He's like, hey, you want to dig the field? Great. Here's a hoe. Go have a good time. We got to get these things done. But what it taught me was a work ethic. And that's the one thing that I think is lost today is we have things so easy that sometimes we forget what it means to actually work. You know, my wife gives me a hard time because she says, Mark, we could pay somebody to do that. And I'm like, yeah, but it's not the same. If I can do it myself, I'm going to do it. The work ethic that you developed on the farm kind of led into your life's passion, your profession, which was coaching. I mean, how did we go from the farm to, you know, I want to be a coach?
That's a great question. I got to throw one farm story in here, Mark, because my first labor job where I got paid was by my dad on the back of a hay wagon, pulling in bales directly off the baler. There's little square ones that you don't ever see anymore. A nickel of mail. Nickel a bale. And I was so excited to make money and stack them bales. And I think every kid should go back into time and have that experience with all that dust in your face, it's blowing and it's itching and you just keep sticking the bales. So that work ethic, like you mentioned, the hand tools, all those experiences, second to none.
I did square bales time in my life and I will never do that again. Ever.
Well, you can do the little round ones too. They're easier to stack. You know, we'd always have neighbors that would come over and say, hey, would they like to work for us? And I always took that up, right. You know, I was cash money. But there was one farmer, Mark, his bales were a little heavier. They were a little dewier than everybody else's. Nobody wanted to work for that guy. So you know what? I grabbed a couple of buddies. We always did it for him. But again, you sometimes do what other people don't and to get where you want to be in life. But I was a first generation athlete. My dad worked on the farm. Our farm's been in our family for 100 plus years. My brother is taking that farm over, which I'm very happy to say that it stays in our family lineage. But, you know, when I got involved in high school, junior high sports, we didn't have many youth sports back then. Now, as soon as you're born, there's youth sports, right? I think my first exposure was Little League Baseball, like in junior high. And, you know, that was our first exposure. And I fell in love with the ball, you know, and just getting around with my friends and being able to participate and have a chance to compete. The competitive juices were flowing. So I think it was embedded in me at a very young age. But then through the process of high school, I think we've all had coaches that have had a big time impact, both positively and negatively on you. And when a person makes a positive influence, it just forever, it's embedded into you. And that football coach for me was Bob Olson. And great man. We did not have a very good reputation as a football team in high school, a winning record, all that stuff. We had a losing record, but he came in and within 2 years we were 5-4 and you would have thought we won the Super Bowl. I mean, 5-4. I mean, that was my best record. And he left. Next year, guess what? 0-9. So if you don't think coaching matters, it does. It's not all about wins and losses, but it was that relationship that he had with me as a man. He pushed me. He pushed me beyond what I thought I could do. And he pushed our team beyond what we thought we could do and started changing the culture of what we had going on. I hope that day comes, and that's what happened. Not the exact track you go down, but I was able to do that. And kind of roundabout way, got out of college and went into being a graduate assistant coach, which for those of you that don't know that life, it's a very tough life. You don't want to be married being a graduate assistant coach. My salary was $400 a month, which meant I was flat broke, living off of Roman noodles and tuna fish and noodles and anything that was cheap, peanut butter jelly sandwiches. But I got a free 2-year education, got my master's in exercise science. I wanted to be a strength coach too, Mark, which kind of got into supplementation. I can even remember my brother and I in high school buying cheap protein and getting plastic pills and stuffing it in these clear gels. And because it tastes so terrible, it was almost like I've never tasted wallpaper paste, but it had to taste like wallpaper paste. It was so terrible. But we were supplementing back then, man, because my uncle, he looked like a cut up dude. He looked like a bodybuilder and he had weights in his basement. So I had the weightlifting itch, the coaching itch, and the graduate assistantship opened the door to get a college experience for a guy that had literally no experience. It was just a baptism into the sport of coaching. I fell in love with it. And I'll never forget my first job signing the contract. My dad goes, "Are you sure you want to do this?" I'm like, "Yeah, $16,500 with a master's, my first job, $16,500." And I mean, I was so excited. And dad's like, "Did you get a car or anything with that?" I go, "I never asked. You know, I don't know if I got benefits. I didn't care." I mean, I was on top of the world because there were so many people in line for that job that I thought, you know, I'm just a small town farm boy from Iowa. I may or may not get it. But the college coaching, it was just intense. I mean, you're working 70, 80 hours a week. It looks glorious on Saturdays, but I'm telling you what, it's a tough life for a family. And generally what you see in my profession, and I love it dearly, is you see a coach that's got his family planted and everything's going good. And then either somebody gets fired or somebody gets promoted and that's your head coach. And then he leaves and you may or may not go with him at the college level. And then you have to make a decision, you know, what am I going to do? Am I going to get a chance to leave or do I have to find another job? And by the time you transplant and go to that next location, your family's still behind. And by the time they get to where you are and get all that done, sell the house, get to school, guess what? It happens again. And I didn't want that, man. I didn't want that. But as a graduate assistant, I got to stay at Drake University. We basically started a program from scratch there, Mark. They dropped Division I football. There's no players on campus. So I got to see how to build from a man named Nick Cortero, who went to Kansas State with Bill Snyder and turned that thing around from the worst in the Big 8 to one of the best. And so I learned a lot of things from Nick. And then a man named Rob Ash took over there after Nick went to K-State. So I was at Drake for 10 years as a grad assistant and an offensive coordinator, line coach. And then I wanted to be my own head coach. I just felt like there's things I want to do my way at that point in my life. And with all that experience, I want to share it. So I had the opportunity to interview at the University of Storm Lake, which is a Division III non-scholarship school. And it was an offer I got. I took it. My wife and I, Gloria, always supported. You got to have a wife that's like glue. They support you because I'm telling you, it's a rough life. You don't see your husband a lot. But we moved to Storm Lake, Iowa, town of 9,000. And that program was averaging 2 wins a year. And within 4 years, we had back-to-back 7-3 years with a great staff, good kids. And turned the town on fire, and they were loving Beaver football. But again, not seeing my kids. I'd get up, they're in bed. I get home, they're in bed. And I'm just thinking there's got to be some other way out there that I could coach my kids and still make a living doing what I love. That got me into direct sales. And a year later, when I started in direct sales, I was able to triple my income and basically resign and move home and start up a youth football league. So that's kind of where it started, you know, from the genesis of making $400 a month to a head college football coach, and then reevaluating the priorities of my life to spend more time with the people I loved rather than more time with the game I loved. but I got to come home and start that youth football league.
You know, it's interesting, Joe, you talked a lot about the things you've learned along the way. I've always found that sports, you know my background, I played them my entire life. I coached baseball and I always said that I wasn't teaching the kids baseball. I was using baseball as a vehicle to teach young boys how to become young men. And there's a big life lesson in there, the leadership concept. But you said something in there that I want you to expound upon a little bit because it's near and dear to my personal heart. You said it's not about the wins and losses. It's, you know, there's something about that. You know, you had 2 7-3 teams. I mean, and you know, guess what? I mean, from winning nothing to 7-3 is an amazing feat, but let's talk about that. It's not about the wins and losses because it's usually about the journey.
It so much is the relationships that you have with the people you go to work with. For me, it was a coaching staff. You got to have different personalities involved, and relationships are the glue that holds you together during the tough times. I mean, when you go 0-9 or have a losing season, you kind of got to look in the mirror first as the head coach. What am I doing wrong? What can I do differently? Then you have to really have the one-on-one conversations, Mark, that are very difficult sometime with your staff and then your players. And I've seen people that do not have good relationships with their players and their coaches, and I've seen those that do. And I could see by body language which one was more receptive to the message and how they basically played for that individual. So if you can get somebody to play hard for you because they want to and they buy into the bigger vision of where you're going, you've got a much better chance to get the wins and losses. That was when their dad died. You know, we've been through everything as a coach, you know, suicide, losing a parent, losing a brother or sister, flunking out of school, flunking a drug test, all these things. And we've always told these people, Mark, I will never quit on you. You will quit on yourself before I'll quit on you. I believe that. You got to have that strong relationship because when the stiff winds blow, who's got your back?
You know, what's interesting is I've played for a lot of different coaches, and there's the coaches that, you know what, I'm going to run through a wall for. And there's those coaches that be like, oh, do I have to go to practice today? And it always seems like the team is in line with the personality of the person that's in charge. And what I mean by that is, you know, I have this rule at ID Life, you know, it's complain up, praise down. In other words, there is none of this, you know, I always tell people, hey, if you want to worry about fault, it's all my fault. 100%. Anything that goes wrong with a company, blame me. I'll take all the blame. Now we don't have to worry about blame. Let's figure out solutions because it eliminates those things. But I learned those concepts as playing in sports and in coaching sports and seeing the reactions that my players had. So I want you to expound on that a little bit, Joe, because you started to touch on something that I really think has value and the listeners would be very interested in. Which is, you know, we all as coaches are going to have a bad day. Something's going to go wrong. It's not going to be going our way. We're going to hit a tough time. And we have this choice of, you know what, we're going to continue in spite of, or we're going to start complaining down.
Well, I think whatever you do at the top duplicates, Mark. And if you complain down, guess what? They'll complain down. And I think the one thing about being a leader, you got to be up when you're up. And you got to be up when you're down. I know that's hard, you know, put a game face on when you're having a bad day. Maybe something didn't go right inside the four walls at home. But if I carry that to practice or I carry that to the meeting room, they can smell it. You know that. Players can smell stuff going on when you're not telling them the truth. So, you know, the leadership aspect of being in a head position or an assistant position, I think you have to lead where you're at. Wherever you're at, you can lead from. You don't have to be a head coach to be a leader. I think that's important, and players can be leaders. And if you're not cut out to be a top tier leader, then be a great follower. You know, followers, not everybody's going to lead, but followers are also a key component of success because there's a way to get things done the right way. And so many little things, Mark, make a big difference out there. All the little things stack up from the way you warm up to the way your locker room looks, to the way you take the field, to the way you dress. All those little things add up. And I think that's vitally important, you know, when you're trying to get everybody to buy in. Because I've seen this. I always told my players, it's going to take a year probably for you to really trust me. I get that. I want you to automatically trust me, but I understand it takes time. But the opposite is true too, Mark. You violate trust. Guess what? Man, it's hard to get it back. I can't be up front in the room saying, guys, you don't do this. And then they see me walking down Main Street with something in my hand. You got to lead by example, right? That's a key cliche or word, three words, very powerful. Don't lead by example. You're not going to have a very good outfit. Lead by example. You know what? If everybody's thinking that, acting like that, and reproducing that, you got a shot.
No, you're right on. There's a big concept that I want to kind of ask your opinion on, because I'm a big believer in it, and we talk about it a lot inside the company, which is there's a difference between leadership by title and permissive leadership. In other words, when you have the title, it's one thing, but when your team wants to follow you because you've earned it even before you have the title, there's a big difference. So let's talk about that concept a little bit, especially when it comes to coaching. I've told my players, hey, you're not going to trust me for the first year. I expect you to because of the title that I have, but you know what? I'm not going to demand that. What I'm going to do is I'm going to earn your trust.
Well, it takes time. And I think every chance you have to be on display where there's some type of adversity that is very difficult to maneuver through, tests you as a man. It tests you. My very first college win up at Buena Vista. The day after that win, I went into the AD's office and he said, hey, I got some bad news. You're going to have to forfeit the game. I'm like, what? He goes, yeah, we forgot to file paperwork on a fifth year senior and he played in that game and we will have to forfeit that game. So that's my first college head job, Mark. My first game, I go out to practice and man, it was hard. But the kids gave me a game ball and I accepted it, thanked them. And I said, hey guys, I got some bad news, but we're going to build off of it for the rest of the season. We have to forfeit this game. And you know what? The way I responded to it, the whole team responded to it. You know what? I can't remember the exact record we had that first year. It wasn't winning, but we set the foundation in that first year. But at the same time, those kids never forget it either. So.
Now, you started to go into a story that I want to expound upon now, which is you went from college coach to then you came home. And all of a sudden, when you came home, you started the youth program, but you mentioned the high school program. And I know this has become near and dear to your heart. So let's get into that story a little bit, because I know that that was big for you.
Yeah. Those group of kids we started the youth program with love football. They love football. And man, I remember being out in my backyard playing with those guys and they'd watch NFL games on Sunday. And then they got into high school and it was almost like God opened the door. Their current high school coach took another job. I interviewed, got the job. And those guys were in junior high 1 year or 2 years away from going to high school. And our high school program had a few winning records in a 20-some-year history, but had never won a playoff game. And when I went to take over the program, I just counseled a few people. They said, you know, you might win a couple games. You'll never win a playoff game. You'll never go to the Uni Dome in the state tournament. And that motivated me. And we worked hard, but the kids bought into everything. And we were able to win a state championship. And it was just a very epic moment in the history of our program and our town. And still one of my favorite moments as a coach, just because of the difference it made. And it wasn't that we won a state championship, it was that process we went through together. The process of the grind, the grit and the determination and the foundation that was laid. So other young kids wanted to get on that uniform. They wanted to wear those colors. And you merged two towns that were kind of against each other because we merged two towns to create this high school called Union. But I really feel that if there was the biggest impact that that run had was the fact that we were able to get the towns to come together and celebrate together, more so than the trophy, more so than the ring. It was the fact that we were able to merge these two towns and not be us against them. It's tough enough to win, but when you're merging towns and small town Iowa, you're always doing this. It's going on as we speak because there's just not enough kids anymore. But it's amazing how a sport can unify things to get to rally people from the communities to look at a cause bigger than the game. But the game became the crusade for that journey. And then just to have a chance to go in that Uni Dome market and play in that game, I can't even tell you what it was like. It just, I can still.
You know, there's a lot of people out there that have probably seen the movie Friday Night Lights. They then made it a TV series. What I tell everyone is that 1988 year, I actually had the pleasure of playing both Carter and Odosa Permian, but my team wasn't good enough to make the movie. But I do know what both of those teams were like. And later on in life, I got a chance to coach the kids of the people that were on that field. It's funny. It was reminiscing in those stories.
Wow.
But what's funny to me in telling you that is that you took kids, I mean, little kids, and it basically like a window opened. Probably not the most talented by no stretch. You know, one of my favorite phrases of all time is, you know, hard work will be talent when talent doesn't work hard. There's a lot of very talented people out there that are never achieve their potential, mainly because they're not willing to work hard. And that's kind of how we started this, is that work ethic isn't in everybody. You know, they're going to quit you way before you quit them. But, you know, as, along that line, you said, hey, look, you have to be an example. Somewhere along the line, you know, through your sports science master's, you decided, you know what, I'm going to be the example, not only from a physical, from a mental, from a leadership standpoint, but I'm also going to take care of myself. And I'm going to show people what it's like to actually take control of your own fitness. Let's talk about that. That journey of yours. You said it started at an early age, but as we get older, it becomes a little bit harder.
That's such a key mark. Again, back to the farm, you know, lifting weights. My brother and I created a small weight room in my dad's basement, and I can remember taking a big drill and drilling through one of the rafter planks and then putting like a pulley on there for lat pull downs. And we welded in the shop a bench and a curl machine. And it's like, I mean, we just were making our own equipment because we were broke. And so we were lifting even then. I'd lift after bailing. I remember going, I liked it. I just something about it, you know, and then you're sweating with your brother, kind of cool. And I've never stopped lifting weights. There's something about it. It's like farming, you know, once it's in your blood. Because if I went a whole week without lifting, I would feel like total withdrawal. And just like I'm failing. So there's something energetic for me personally. And part of it may be due to my DNA. I respond better to lifting heavy. And I was told by an older gentleman once, he goes, Joe, if you ever stop lifting heavy, I'm just going to tell you, you'll never get it back. And I said, okay, all right. You know, but I also realized, Mark, you know, my journey, you know, through high school, we had very limited weightlifting program. We lifted like 2 weeks before the season. And then it evolved to, you know, college, where I was in charge of the weightlifting program as a certified strength conditioning coach. And I enjoyed that part of it. You know, I love the I love the science of it. I love the mystery of it. I love seeing a freshman come in and a before and after photo to a senior, a freshman to a senior, seeing that transformation due to the weight room. And, you know, I felt like I got to try and, you know, be the example. And the only thing that got worse is, you know, food habits. As I got older, I probably ate more. And I was getting a little chunky, you know, and that wasn't good. That wasn't good. Not good on the practice field. It's not good in general. So I always did the checkups and stuff with my doctor. But, you know, cholesterol was kind of getting up there. And my dad died of he had prostate cancer. So I have a concern about that. And so, you know, there's some health things that I'm always lingering when I'm doing my checkups. But I always wanted to lift the weights all the way through. It got involved in kettlebells. That's really my true passion. Sometimes the student teaches the teacher, you know, the coach teaches the student. But all of a sudden I had one of my former players actually in the weight room with me, Brad Nelson. He started going, hey, try these kettlebells out. I'm like, never heard of them. You know, I don't think that's going to be a big deal. He put me through a 20-minute workout, Mark, and I literally about puked in 20 minutes. I said, I'm in. I'm in. So I got certified, first kettlebell instructor in the state of Iowa that was certified. And we actually used our kettlebell program for the state championship team because our weight room wasn't very big. We had to do what we had with what we had. And I felt like, you know, the kettlebell was something I could take with me. It was portable. Nobody knew if you were very strong based on looking at a kettlebell. They don't, like two plates, one plate, three plates. They know. Kettlebell, right. No idea. It's in kilos. So enjoyed that tremendously. And still, you know, that's my favorite tool in the tool shed, but I still like the free weights. But Mark, I think you know this story because I told it to you, but man, my joints were starting to wear out too. And I had double knee replacement about a year and a half ago, just because I was in so much pain and arthritis. And I tried everything. I tried injections. I tried everything that's topical. And I just realized, you know, God only gave you one part and the used parts aren't quite as good as the originals. So I've become a little smarter in my weightlifting protocol.
You know, you're an icon in the network marketing space, and you started going that earlier. Let's just be real. You rose to the pinnacle in your prior company. And as things happen, life happened. Something changed. And all of a sudden it's like, hey, all of this that I built my entire life in literally 60 days was ripped out from underneath you, you and the tens of thousands of others. And you had to rebuild. And as a result of that, we were the beneficiaries. You and I got to know each other. I will never forget the very first time we met. And it was literally like, as I was walking out, I was like, okay, well, this is never going to happen because the rumors, there's no way that this is going to happen to a company that's been around for 25 years. But it then did. And, you know, it's interesting to me that, you know, that meeting, I think, at least I know it was for a mutual friend we have, Benji Park. You know, when I was meeting with Benji for the very first time, Benji was sitting there in that meeting with his arms crossed and had the scowl on his face. And I was for sure that there's no way that I am ever going to have this man like me or trust me in any way. Benji and I were talking, I mean, literally it's like 2 years later. And he goes, you know, you had me at hello. And I was like, Benji, I'm great at reading people, but I would have never guessed that a million years. And part of the reason why is because he and his family had struggled with this wonderful, you know, thing called MTHFR. And here I am trying to explain to people what this genetic polymorphism is and how it affects the body and how it can do all these nasty things to you and how it's misdiagnosed by doctors. And, you know, we've done a whole podcast series on it because we're really trying to get awareness out there. But what I really want to know is kind of when you got introduced to ID Life and all of a sudden, you know, like I said, you had the world on your shoulders with regard to where you were, you're learning a whole brand new product line and a whole brand new concept of supplementation. What's some of the things that you liked that you saw that when you came to ID Life?
Well, first of all, Mark, I'm extremely grateful for that first run. It taught me a lot, and I learned a lot from a giant in the industry. And the one thing he always said, that the only thing that could ever stop us was ego, arrogance, and pride. And that's probably why the fall. But here's the key thing. I don't think things happen by chance. And I remember that meeting too, and Logan and Laura, and it was epic because, you know, the door opened up that day, you know, and it was that meeting that was monumental for me to come home and tell Gloria, this is it. Cause you know, crazy things happen when things fall apart, you know, in this industry. And some of it is just, it's mind boggling. That's a whole nother episode. But what attracted me to you guys was number one, relationship still, you know, Todd having a relationship was a key. And then I think the biggest thing when you're talking about no artificial sweeteners, no artificial flavors, those type of things, I was hearing more and more in the audience, you know, the younger people, they were like, I don't want to do that because you got sucralose in it. And I'm like, I've been taking it for 20 years, you know, like, but I know, Mark, physically puffiness. I mean, I remember the puffiness I felt and just seeing some pictures back then about that same time, you know, that was a big thing. I didn't know I was getting puffy because you see yourself every day in the mirror, but you know, part of the joint inflammation issue and probably due to a lot of those things that weren't. So I think that presentation there in the part about individualized strip pack of vitamins, I couldn't believe my wife is weighs half as much as me is taking the same vitamin pack. I'm like, you know, how does she take the same packet? That blew my mind. And I never really got an answer until I came to ID Life with you. And you're like, well, you're not going to take the same strip pack. Nobody does. I'm like, whoa, that's cool. And then that DNA factor, you know, to get that personalized playbook, I would call it as a coach or a manual for your body, you know, the 40 plus pages, that is also something that was like no one else has. So when those two things were big, you know, big. I'm a sports performance guy, Mark. That's a key for me. But those two were probably the most instrumental in my mindset going, I can do this one more time. I got one more ride in this old cowboy. And this is going to be,
you know, when everyone came over, it was astounding. In the first 60 to 75 days, a lot of people had lost a significant amount. I mean, talking 8 to 10 pounds, just boom, felt better. The joints didn't hurt and all this. And they're like, oh, these supplements are amazing. And I was like, guys, it's really not so much the supplements as much as what's not in the supplements anymore. And trying to basically say, hey, we don't want the credit for this. Let me explain to you what's happening to you physiologically. And by removing the artificial sweeteners, by removing the 1,000+ milligrams of caffeine that you're taking per day, because there was caffeine in the vitamins and there was caffeine in the energy and there was caffeine everywhere. And the adrenals were all blown out and the hormones were out of balance. And people started to feel better. What be honest, what I was trying to do at that time is trying to give people transparency of, look, it's not what you think it is. I'm not going to take credit for this. This is really a lifestyle diet change. And that's kind of what ID Life stands for. It's we have replacements. We don't have replacements. We have supplements, but we try to teach people diet and lifestyle choices. The whole idea behind the genetic test to get the foundation, to get your playbook, is to get your lifestyle right. It's not to guide you to a supplement. So let's talk about that. I mean, we are aging, but when you got your genetic report and all of a sudden you're like, what was some of the aha moments? It was kind of like, oh, I might have been doing this wrong for a long time. You have a master's degree in exercise physiology. You had coached a lot of kids. You ran the weight room for a lot of different kids. And probably looking back, you're like, oh, wow, I had every single one of these kids doing the same thing. But now it's like, oh, I would do this so differently now.
Any strength coach is crazy if he doesn't look at that model. It would save you gray hair and losing hair, because there's nothing more frustrating in the weight room than a gentleman or lady coming up to you going, hey, I'm doing exactly what you told me to do and I have zero results, or I'm getting worse. And you're like, are you getting enough sleep? What are you eating? So you try to be a dietitian, you try to be a strength coach, you try to be a sleep analyst, and it just took the guesswork out of each individual and gave me a place to go so I could save time. Utilize time factor. So the biggest factor out of that whole book, Mark, as a farm boy, was the ability not to go back and take second helpings right away. Because my brain did not connect to my head to say, you're full. And when I'm waiting at 20 minutes plus, I might go back and get a little bit, but I'm not getting that full plate, that second full plate. So that was probably the biggest factor. And then my wife and I would argue. I was a strength coach, so I'm going to coach my wife in the weight room. And I'm saying, Gloria, you need to bike longer. You need to get on the elliptical longer.
Or like hit type. Not cross-fitting.
High intensity. Yeah. Hit exercises. And guess what? She started losing inches. Maybe not the scale, but the inches were coming off. And when mom is happy, everybody's happy. That's what a typical guy will tell you, right? So she found a light bulb there. And then the other part was interesting in the fat accumulation. Hers was more subcutaneously under the skin. And I could hide mine better because mine were in the muscle. So she's like, that's why you can eat as much as you do and you don't get so heavy. I'm like, hey,
yes,
genetics, man. Genetics. Thank my mom and dad. We ate better at home. We ate more at home. We made better decisions when we went out to eat. Not always. I mean, sometimes we break the code, but just being wiser at some of the things that you're realizing, the processed oils and the different foods out there. And even a lettuce salad looks great on the menu, but it's all that other stuff you put on top of it. You know, the type of, I never thought about anything, grabbing some ranch right off the shelf of the grocery store and throw it in the shopping cart. So we're becoming wiser shoppers in terms of the grocery store. And I attribute a lot of that credit to Gloria. I mean, she does a great job and does the majority of the cooking. I'll do the grilling, but we work together on that. And you keep improving the tool where we can take that data and put it into that website now. And you don't have to be an expert, because I just don't feel equipped to maybe sometimes read that data to somebody. Now we've got a tool, to be able to do that.
You mentioned CrossFit a couple of times. My son, when he was young, he decided, hey, Dad, I want to get into CrossFit. I was like, okay. I said, I'm going to take you out to the ranch. He's like, what? I said, yeah, I'm going to take you out to the ranch. I'm going to let you work out there for a day. I said, I'm going to put you through all the things I went through as a kid. And he goes, this isn't CrossFit. I said, oh, really? Now go to the CrossFit gym and see all the things that you're doing. CrossFit got stolen from the ranch and the farm. I mean, let's be real. CrossFit, we were CrossFit before CrossFit was real.
Putting fence in, bailing hay.
Everything. Moving rocks. Seems like you get it all done.
Yeah.
So, you know, you were instrumental in pushing ID Life into designing and developing a new fitness line. Let's just be real. You were. And I asked you to be patient, and thank God you were. Not always readily patient, but you were patient. And the reason why I wanted you to be patient is because we wanted to make sure we got it right. And we wanted to make sure we took the time to get the contracts and relationships with the raw material providers and things like that. And we did launch that almost a year ago now, it seems like. And we are getting some pretty amazing results from folks. So let's talk about the evolution of the ID Fitness line and what it's meant to you, what you've kind of seen, and some of the stories that you heard about it.
Well, I wouldn't even be in this industry, Mark, if it wasn't for fitness products. Recovery products are extremely important. Pre-workout products, extremely important. And when this new product line that you worked to bring out came out, I was jacked sideways, off of one sample. And other people like Pete Trainer, our only full-time strength coach in Iowa high school, you know, he goes, I'll pay double for that if I can get it right now. So we had several people that only offered one sample. But I tell you what, the big difference, Mark, for me in the age factor was getting those extra reps with the work product, getting those extra reps in my set where normally I would struggle with, let's say you did a set of 10, doing 8, 9, and 10, I would have to really struggle. And I was just powering through those with the same weight, you know, using the product line. And the other thing is I was so used to trying to get jacked up before the workout, you know, caffeinated up where I'm feeling, you know, that, you know, as I got older, I don't know if I need all that anymore, you know? So there was this, you're talking decaf. I was freaking out when you said decaffeinated in that work product. I'm like, oh my gosh, that's not even going to sell. Now we know it's selling pretty well right now. And then the recovery product, I know I was trying to beat you over the head with a hammer going, Mark, I got to have this product to help me sleep better. And you go, well, Joe, if you look at the ingredients on there, you actually have some of those ingredients in that recover product. And I'm like, oh, double whammy. Not only can it help me recover my muscles, but it can get me better sleep. So we got a double whammy product, and longevity is a big word. And then you brought out the missile or the big surprise with the load. Because when you said there's ATP, HMB, and creatine, monohydrate, and high level, you know, not some cheap, that being the only product on the market, that was the Christmas present of Christmas presents for anybody in the world that loves to work out. And I know our women are on fire with it, which is kind of a pleasant surprise. So yeah, the 1-2-3 punch, Mark, our fit line, you know, put it up against anybody. And you know what? We're not the cheapest on the market. We know that. That was never a goal. Even that you guys have never brought that out. But I tell you what, I'd rather have a quality workout every day.
You know, that's the one thing I always tell people is when you're doing research and development, you have two ways that you can develop products. The first way is here is your budget. Design a product within the budget. It can't go above this. The other way is I want the best product available on the market today. If you do it the second way, which is the way we develop everything, you don't get to ask about price until it's done. And then, so what's strange about ID Life is when we send out samples to you and other people that help us develop these products along the line, as I always say, I'm the test dummy for everything. So if something goes wrong, it's going to happen to me first. So, you know, I always tell them, check the chemicals in my body from all these supplements that I'm designing first. But the idea behind that is once we say, yes, this is what we want, this is what works, then we're like, okay, how much does it cost? Because you can't have cost and best in the same conversation. And we don't want to be second to anybody. As I say, there may be something out there as good, but you're never going to find anything better. It just doesn't exist. And if you do by chance, let us know and we'll change. We'll get better. But, you know, in the line, it is crazy because one of the things you mentioned, which is absolutely true, we weren't just designing a fitness line. We were designing a longevity line. There was something in there that we noticed that people started dealing with, which was the loss of lean muscle. There's two main ingredients for longevity. One is the amount of lean muscle that you have on your body as you age. The second, which a lot of people aren't familiar with, is actually grip strength. Testing somebody's grip strength will actually tell you from a longevity standpoint, you know, what their expectations are. And women are the ones that lose their grip strength faster than anyone else. So in designing this product, it was like, hey, can we do something that at least carves off or helps stave off the ill effects of what we call sarcopenia, the loss of lean muscle mass 1% per year starting at age 30 for women? Is there something we can provide them that can help them with that? I mean, helps men too, obviously. I mean, I'm lifting more now than I ever have before. But at the end of the day, that was kind of the concept behind it. But what was interesting is you were telling me a story the other day that I kind of want you to replay on this one because I found it absolutely amusing, which was you have now been using the fitness line for a good bit of time, but you decided, hey, you know what? I'm going to go work out and I'm not going to take anything. Let's talk. I mean, not a good decision. You've had this in your bloodstream. I mean, you've been going with it for a long time and all of a sudden just one day you're like, hey, I don't have anything today, but I can still knock out this workout. How did that work out for you?
Well, got behind in my schedule and just still wanted to get a workout in and just was flying. And I thought, you know, I'm just going to work out. Don't have time to take the work. And I struggled so bad. I was like, I fell asleep. I couldn't finish my reps. I almost quit. I mean, I was so frustrated, Mark. I felt like it can't make that big a difference, right? Yeah, it does. It does make that big a difference. That was the only day since it's been revealed that I had never worked out without taking the product prior to the workout. You know, sometimes like it's not magical. It's 5 minutes before I work out. So I let it kind of get into me as I'm going. Other time I, you know, half an hour to 20 minutes before, but zero, taking zero product, I got zero results in that workout. So I'd call it a waste day for working out is what I'd call it.
Yeah, lactic acid was real that day. Well, Joe, you recently were provided an opportunity to do something for a second time. And I know this is a passion project for you. You and I actually haven't had a conversation about it, but I got to see your announcement. I know I've spoken to your wife about it and she's told me how excited you are. So it looks like you are now a head coach, but not just a head coach, a head football coach once again. So let's talk about that.
Yes, sir. I've been at Union High School with a youth program, middle school program, high school program, 24 years, and resources, time and effort, love it, always will bleed black and red. But this last year I was an assistant for the high school program and I just felt this internal renewal of my energy, and a neighboring school that is only one more minute to drive to reached out and said, would you be interested? And I'm like, you know what? I'd be interested in taking a look. And long story short, we interviewed and it was just a renewal of my spirit, Mark. I mean, I felt like I got more gas in the tank to give. And out of 48 teams in the classification, they're 48th. So we're at the bottom of the barrel. But I look at that as a great opportunity to start with the relationship with the kids again, that whole thing you and I already talked about. You know, do we want to win games? Absolutely. I'm not going over there to lose. But I also understand that there's a process. And football is like a giant ocean liner trying to turn around in the ocean. It's not a speedboat. You know, basketball, some of the other sports, you can have one or two great athletes and you can turn it around quickly. You know, it's an ocean liner that's going to slowly turn and it's going to take time through the process to make that happen. And the end result can be winning, but relationships come before the win. And culture, faith, and leadership, those are three words we build our ID Life business with. Will apply here too. We've got to get the culture changed. We've got to rip it apart with a Bowie knife and start over from scratch from every little detail and understand that there are things that are necessary on the foundational level year one. And it's going to go back to give me some trust. I'm going to have to earn it for a year and let's put it together. And the first thing, Mark, was starting with the coaching staff. And I've met some great people over there. In fact, every one of them, I'm retaining every one of them that were over there, adding some influence from some of the guys that I have coached with before, or, you know, even my son is looking at possibly joining me. So we're still working out the details on that, but I'm excited, Mark. It's like a renewal of my spirit. I got to tell you, I'm more excited on the phone. I'm pumped up and I'm really excited to make a difference.
Know, and I want people to hear the passion that's in your voice, because sometimes things get lost, you know, and people don't appreciate the internal juice that basically gets you going. And for you, it is coaching young athletes. But, you know, one of the things I tell people all the time is losing is contagious as much as winning is contagious. And you mentioned something that I think is probably going to be the biggest differentiation that you're going to bring to that school, which is culture. You know, I mean, everything rises and falls with culture, leadership. I mean, it's part of what this is. And you're bringing something that they didn't have before, which is hope. You've been there. You've done that. You know what it takes. So guess what? Everyone is going to rise up to the leader. That's just what happens. And I wish you only the greatest of luck. And I know you're going to be successful. I know it's a battleship. It's going to take a little while to turn around. Maybe an aircraft carrier. Who knows? It's just going to take a little while. But, you know, if there was one thing that you would want everyone on this podcast to know about leadership, you know, you would be remiss if you didn't give them that one nugget of things that, you know, through all of your years of coaching and learning and talking to Charlie before he passed and all the things he talked to you about. What's that one thing that you would want everyone to know about leadership?
Well, you said the most important message, everything rises and falls with leadership. But if that's true, then how can I change myself, right? How can I get better? It's through the people you associate, the books you read, the podcasts you listen to, like this one. If you're listening to this point, you're on this podcast, congratulations, because 90% of the people haven't got to the end of the podcast. They hung up before you're getting the most important message of the whole day right here. So those that finish what they start have a better chance of succeeding in life. And as a person that questions your leadership, where are you? hey, the greatest part about that, Mark, is we can raise that up. You know, you can work on leadership. It is something that can be taught, but it's caught by people that are showing the example out there. So look in the mirror, ask somebody else that's close to you on a 1 to 10 scale, where are you at? And then if you have the desire, which is the key word, desire, everybody's disgusted with the world. Everybody's disgusted with the economy. A lot of people are disgusted with their genetics or their workout routine. But I'll take a person that has strong desire over a person that has strong disgust any day. We'll move the world on desire. If you desire to raise yourself as a leader, get around people that are like-minded, man. The stinking thinking people there, you got to cut the cord. You got to burn the ships and move forward, because that's the only way we're going to change this country. And for me, it's on the football field with young men, just like you said in your baseball journey, Mark. You felt called to change those young boys into young men. It's got to start there. We've got to get the men to rise up. And as a leader, you can work on it, Mark. You can invest in yourself. You can associate with others. And I encourage you to do that and start today. Start today.
Joe, on behalf of myself and on behalf of IDLife, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to do this podcast. This is one of my personal favorites. You know, I really have enjoyed just having a conversation. But most importantly, I think there's going to be some people that are going to get a lot of value out of your life lessons. And again, I wish you all of the greatest luck in your next endeavor. I think you're going to turn it a little bit faster than you think you will. But if anyone knows how to do it, you do. But on behalf of myself and IDLife, thanks for being here. Thanks for everyone for listening. Until next time, this is Mark Bennett. I'll talk to you real soon.